Well, welcome back to this week's episode of Tour Guide Tell All with Candon and the Rebeccas.
Hello.
Hi.
So we are going to chat about who is my favorite character in American history, Robert Todd Lincoln. I think I talk about him on every tour that I lead.
Easily like 75% of my tours and or casual conversations involve Robert Todd Lincoln.
This is what happens when you become friends with a tour guide. We talk about Robert Todd Lincoln on a fairly regular basis, whether you want to hear about him or not.
To kind of put ourselves in our listeners' shoes, how much about Robert Todd Lincoln did you guys know before you became tour guides or history majors or like just growing up? Had you ever heard of him?
I'm not sure how much I knew about a lot of presidential children as a child. I wish I had known more because I think it's an interesting entry into history when you're young. But it will not surprise you to know, as the nerd that I am, as I started learning more about Lincoln, reading up in school, and then in college, getting really kind of obsessed with Lincoln, then I sort of became, as a trajectory to that, a little obsessed with Robert Todd Lincoln. And we were talking about this before we started recording, but his ability to keep turning up at all these key moments in history makes him a really fascinating figure.
I mean, I was aware of him because I knew about Lincoln and I knew that Lincoln had children. And I think that I knew that only one of his kids really makes it to adulthood, but it wasn't until I read Assassination Vacation when it came out.
I love that book. Love it.
Love so much. And I was like, wait a minute, really? Like, he was at all these places? This is ridiculous. That I kind of like put it all together.
See, I had never heard about it. Granted, growing up, my focus, and I don't know if I want to admit this to the public on the podcast, but my degrees are in ancient history, not American.
Mine are in European history, so.
American, I'm like the only one. Fascinating.
I feel like my ancient history background comes in handy when I talk about Washington, D.C. architecture, though.
Oh, definitely.
I had never heard of Robert Todd Lincoln until I became a tour guide in Washington, D.C. and looking and researching. But it's just he shows up in so many of my tours. And then I learned his story that we're going to tell everybody tonight. And I find ways to include it on every tour that I give. Or if this story has nothing to do with whatever neighborhood we're in or whatever themed tour I'm giving, I use this as my, oh, we're stuck in traffic, or, oh, let's just chat as we're walking down the street. I'm really good at segueing Robert Todd Lincoln into any tour, or as Rebecca said, any conversation.
Yes.
I now have eighth grade students. Normally this time of year, we'd be out with eighth graders who I have groups who I have every year now. And their teachers, like, as soon as we get on the bus, they're like, when are you going to talk about the curse of Robert Todd Lincoln? I have kids who are like, you told my brother about the curse of Robert Todd Lincoln. So it's definitely become my go-to on a bus, but it's also a very human story and it's got a nice bit of intrigue to it.
Yeah, yes. It is very fascinating and unexpected. It's very much like the truth is stranger than fiction.
And he's human in a way that John Wilkes Booth is not. Like, there's a humanness to John Wilkes Booth as well, but it's because we're so like used to seeing him as the archetypal villain. Like, I show John Wilkes Booth's picture on my tours and we're so conditioned to think of him in a villain role that people automatically say he looks ugly. And John Wilkes Booth was objectively not an unattractive man, but we're so conditioned to think of him that way. But Robert Todd Lincoln has this ability to be humanized in a way that his father no longer does and his mother no longer does.
Well, Lincoln, the father, the president, right, literally on the pedestal if you think about him in the memorial, but even in our collective memory, right, Lincoln is one thing I think all Americans can agree on. We were talking though a little bit before though about first children, and I think Robert Todd Lincoln is such an interesting son of a president because he is so tragic because there's so much of the shadow of his father, whether you adored his father or hated his father. He was such a big figure in his own lifetime, in Robert Todd Lincoln's own lifetime. And you compare it to someone like Alice Roosevelt Longworth, who we're talking about on the podcast a couple weeks ago. And she's this big personality and she's all about the attention. And Robert Todd Lincoln is not that. He tries to get away from that constantly. And yet he's forced out front over and over.
And there's such an interesting history with presidential sons, and some of them are successes. George W. Bush, John Quincy Adams, to think of a few. Some of them are really not. See all of FDR's sons, the 18 marriages they had between them. And Robert Todd Lincoln sort of has that middle road. Like, he's a success and definitely comfortable, and he's very clearly very intelligent, but he has this huge tragic like backstory.
So I just want to go back to the whether they were good looking or not.
Let's get to the real talk.
First of all, I do think John Wilkes Booth, even though he's an evil soul, I think he looked good.
You guys, Lewis Powell.
I cannot support this.
No, but Robert Todd Lincoln, I now only picture him as, what is his name, who I'm picturing?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt,
who, oh my God, I adore him.
From the Lincoln movie, which I highly recommend, although the Lincoln movie has a scene with President Lincoln, Daniel Day-Lewis, and Robert Todd Lincoln, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, where Daniel Day-Lewis slaps him, which I have to call shenanigans on, because we have no evidence, and it seems completely out of line that Abraham Lincoln would have ever laid a hand on his sons. He was such an indulgent father in many examples, and even with Robert Todd Lincoln, who we'll talk about this in a little bit, even though maybe he wasn't as indulgent with him, mm-hmm. the idea that he would have ever slapped him is,
yeah,
is
no way
good for the drama, but
right. But I love that movie so much, and I also appreciate that movie for installing Joseph Gordon-Levitt in my mental image when I talk about Robert Todd Lincoln, because I'm going to enjoy this conversation tonight so much more. All right, so should we talk about Robert Todd?
So he's the first child of President Abraham Lincoln and Mary Todd Lincoln, 1843. He's 7 when he gets his little brother, Eddie, but he's not going to have Eddie for very long. Eddie's going to die right about the age of 3. There's many, many cause of deaths listed for Eddie. Probably tuberculosis is most likely. So he loses his little brother when he's old enough to understand what that means. And then not even a year later, what was it, 10 months? 10 months later, he has a new little brother, Willie, who the family adores and dotes on, including Robert. And we will talk about what happens. Rebecca, you want to?
Yeah. And then there's a fourth, the littlest brother, Tad, is the youngest. And so he's got this pretty significant age gap, which sort of makes him apart. And it's almost like he's an only child for a little while. But yet at the same time, old enough to know what's going on, or at least sort of sense what's going on, when his brother, dies when he's about 10 years old. So the tragedy starts out strong and doesn't really let up.
I think for Robert Todd Lincoln too, there's definitely this gulf between him and his younger brothers of Willie and Tad, who will be really doted on by their father, who, you know, President Lincoln will be very indulgent with gifts and sort of spoiling them. And Robert isn't really as much of a part of that. Robert says later in his life that his dad was always gone. President Lincoln was a politician, but also a lawyer. And he wasn't a lawyer who set up in a firm and just stayed in one place. He rode the circuit. He would go around hearing cases all across Illinois. So he was never home. And he really admits, Robert Todd Lincoln, that he didn't have a close relationship with his dad. And then his dad becomes president. And he says he had scarcely 10 minutes quiet talk with him during the presidency on account of his constant devotion to business. So you have this sort of workaholic father. You have these two younger brothers who take kind of the cuteness factor and the adulting factor. And Robert Todd Lincoln gets sort of left out in the cold a little bit.
And by the time that Lincoln becomes president in 1861, first of all, there's clearly going to be a war. So his father's attention is tied up. And he's 18. And he's going off to Harvard. And so his father brings the little two children, Willie and Tad, into the White House. And Robert Todd Lincoln sort of heads off to Harvard about a year, not quite a year after his father becomes president. The middle son, Willie, is going to die of what was called bilious fever at the time. We're not entirely sure. We think that that's typhoid, but really anybody's guess. But he dies in 1862. In the midst of the war. And so if you can imagine, poor Robert is away at Harvard, His parents are obviously grief-stricken. And Willie Lincoln, who was 12 at the time, has died. Willie Lincoln also, there's not really a lot of funeral activity for him. We're in the midst of the war and no one can travel. And so they actually have to put, just as kind of a side note here, they actually have to put Lincoln, sort of borrow a crypt for him at a cemetery in Washington, D.C. called Oak Hill, which is still there. The crypt called the Carroll Crypt is still at Oak Hill Cemetery, where Lincoln, Willie Lincoln's body will rest for the 3 years between his death and the end of his father's life.
You mentioned Robert T. Lincoln going to Harvard. When we were kind of working on this pod, I wanted to know a little bit more about what it was like for Robert T. Lincoln in those years. And he actually applied for Harvard in 1859, and he failed 15 out of the 16 entrance exams. So imagine, you're the eldest son. You're like the pride of the family. You've got this father who is becoming very, very successful, and you go to apply to Harvard and you can't pass all but one, right? It's so embarrassing. He has to go to Exeter for a year, basically study up, bone up, and he gets into Harvard on the second try. But there's something about that, I think, that really shades his personality. He's involved in Harvard. He does Hasty Pudding, which I find fascinating, knowing what I kind of know about Robert T. Lincoln, that he was in this theatrical troupe and was doing all this really outgoing stuff. But people who knew him there kind of described him as emerging as this unsympathetic bore. And I think it's because he had to work so hard academically to get in, to succeed, and then subsequently get into Harvard Law.
Mm-hmm. And as the Civil War is going on, he wants to serve, which is admirable of him, but his
imagine
mother,
being, you know, 20 during the Civil War and everyone you know is fighting and you're stuck.
Right. Universities are emptying out because obviously at that time only men went to university, thumbs down. You know, the universities are emptying out because boys are supposed to go and sign up to fight. Robert T. Lincoln wants to sign up, but his mother is terrified. She's already lost two sons. She suffers from depression and sort of anxiety related issues, probably what we would instantly identify today as postpartum depression. And she doesn't want to risk losing another child. And so she begs and pleads with her husband, the president, to give Robert a sinecure, basically an easy time of it, an easy post. And Lincoln feels awful about this. The president is sending other mother's sons to die, whereas his own son kind of gets a pass. Robert T. Lincoln spends the part of the war on Ulysses S. Grant's staff. And so he's sort of removed on the general staff. He's removed from actually fighting. But he actually
really
does serve.
Mary T. Lincoln, though, for playing the I've lost 50% of my son's card and I'm not eager to give up another. So, you know, it's interesting because you can sort of see it from President Lincoln's perspective. You can see it from Robert's perspective as this young man who wants, but I can see it from Mary's point of view, having lost these two young sons, only at this point having Robert and Tad left, and just knowing what she knows about the war, having brothers-in-law and all of that who are dying in action, just that fear. And so I don't blame her for playing that card, but it puts President Lincoln in a really, really tricky situation on a public scale, and certainly behind the scenes in their private life as well.
Yeah, you can see, I feel like that this part of the story is super modern. You can see everybody kind of see everyone's point of view on this. Mary's, the president's, Robert's, like they all seem very sympathetic in this moment.
So yeah, as we get to 1865, Robert T. Lincoln is finally serving on Grant's staff. So he's connected to what's happening as the war is ending, although not on the front lines of combat. But he is with Grant in those last kind of 30 days of the war as Richmond falls, as Grant has Lee on the run, and as we get to April 9th, Appomattox and the surrender. So Robert T. Lincoln gets to be witness to sort of this significant part, the end of the war. As we get to the day of Lincoln's assassination, Lincoln's last day, April 14th, 1865, Robert T. Lincoln has returned to Washington, D.C. He's exhausted. He's disgusting. He's been on the go for 30 straight days. He hasn't been back home. In a newspaper article in 1921, a friend of Robert Todd Lincoln's kind of shared the way Robert used to describe that, like, early evening, late afternoon, where he was sort of enjoying this well-earned cigar. He was leaning against the wall in a study, kind of propped up, and he was just sort of trying to relax. And his father comes in and asks him kind of one last time, will you come to the theater with us tonight? And I think Robert says what most of us in that situation would say. He says no. He says he can barely keep his eyes open, sitting there having that cigar. He's never going to make it through the play that evening. But he does note in conversations to friends, he says that if he had gone to the theater that night, he would have been seated behind his father, because in the box, there were the four people there, President Lincoln, Mary Todd Lincoln, and then their two guests, kind of four across. Robert Todd Lincoln would have been seated behind them, and he would have been leaning his chair up against the door, just like he was doing in the room at the White House, leaning his chair back, and that would have kept the door from opening, would have kept John Wilkes Booth from entering the box. So that's something Robert Todd Lincoln carries with him late into his life. He's telling friends this in the 1920s.
I just want to pause on, like, the pathos of that, like, moment for him, that, you know, this simple conversation with your dad, like, hey, you want to come out with us? And he says, no, he's tired. He just wants to zone out and smoke his cigar. And then that's that. And for the rest of his life, first of all, that's the last conversation he has with his father. And then the knowledge that had he decided to change his mind and go, his father still would have been with him. And so I can imagine that must have haunted him until the day he died.
And what I love is the way he tells the story is interesting insight into Robert Todd Lincoln's mind, because it isn't that he would have been this big hero and he would have fought off Booth. It's by the simple act of a fifth person in this tiny box, his body would have just blocked the door. He doesn't even write himself as the man who would have, like, fought him and saved him. It's just, if I'd been there, the door wouldn't have opened. And I think that's an interesting look into his humility,
yes,
as a person.
Yes.
So Robert Todd Lincoln, right, was supposed to be there that night. He isn't. He is asleep at the White House. He is truly exhausted. He's asleep. He said he hears the noise of a carriage kind of racing up, pulling in right in front of the White House. He thinks it must be news for his father, maybe news regarding the end of the war. And then, of course, he learns instead it is news about his father, that his father's been attacked. He's going to race over to the Peterson boarding house, which is where his father's body has been transferred. And Robert Todd Lincoln will be there in the last hours of his father's life.
He's by his father's side. He's literally standing right there, sort of slumped over at the head of the bed. His mother is there. He spends all night. They come to get him around 11-ish that night at the White House, and it's just a few blocks away to Ford's, and he actually spends the entire rest of the night standing next to his father's bed until his father dies.
Important to note, as I am a bit of a Mary apologist, Mary is with her husband for a while until her weeping and wailing start to really get under the skin of Secretary of War Edwin Stanton, who sort of decided that he is the man in charge of Lincoln's final hours. And he'll actually bellow that she be taken out of the room and not be brought back because of the noise that she's making in her grief. So while Mary is with her husband for a brief bit, Robert actually gets more time with his father because he's there with all the men surrounding him when Lincoln actually perishes on April 15th.
There really is just no sympathy for Mary Lincoln. And I always feel, I mean, I know that this is tangential to Robert's story, but his mother just gets the short end of the stick. Mary Lincoln clearly had what we would diagnose today as depression, and she's lost several children. Her husband has literally been shot sitting next to her. And yet, all Edwin Stanton can think about is that, oh, she's too loud and this woman needs to be taken out.
She's too hysterical.
Just Mary Lincoln just gets the raw end of a lot of things.
So you have to imagine Robert Todd Lincoln. He's 21 years old. I don't know if we had said that explicitly, but he's 21 when all of this happens. He will talk later in life about all the people that were outside of the Peterson boarding house standing vigil, how moved he was that people stood there all night long, how touched he was by the people in the room, the cabinet, Lincoln's closest staff and friends, by the doctors, by the care everyone took. So Robert Todd Lincoln is witness to all of this. And then in the next few days, he's really the family's rock. Mary is in no condition to deal with the grieving. She can't handle making plans. She can't handle any of the things that need to happen. So Robert is really the person that the government is negotiating with and making plans with. And he has to be there for Tad. Tad is 12 when his father is assassinated. And his big brother is so important to him. It's the person who's kind of carrying him through this. Robert Todd Lincoln is the one who negotiates with now President Andrew Johnson to let the family stay in the White House.
In fairness to Robert Todd Lincoln, it may not have been that much of a negotiation. Andrew Johnson really was in no mental condition to like make demands, considering he kind of becomes president and then has a massive panic attack for like 3 weeks. So I don't think it was like that tough. I think Andrew Johnson wanted to run away as well.
It might not have been much of a negotiation, but sort of Robert Todd Lincoln, I think, who assesses the situation and says, my mother's not ready to move out. We have no idea where we're going to go. We have no money, no income coming in. So Robert will work with President Andrew Johnson to give the family some time. Eventually, though, they do have to leave the White House. They have to go. So they move to Chicago. And Robert Todd Lincoln, now at 21, 22, is the breadwinner. He has to support his family. President Lincoln left them with very little money, very little funds. So it's Robert's responsibility. Robert Todd Lincoln, though, eventually sort of is able to get out from sort of the shadow of this grief a little bit. He strikes out on his own the year after his father is assassinated. So in 1866, he moves out of the family house. He starts practicing law. He gets married. And then in 1871, his beloved little brother, Tad, dies. So at this point, Robert Todd Lincoln is not quite 30, and he's lost all three of his siblings and his father. Again, Mary cannot deal. She cannot deal with Tad's death. And so it's Robert who has to arrange the funeral. He hosts the funeral in a Chicago home. I can't imagine having the strength to do that for the little brother that you love so much. He transports the casket. He's the one who rides on the train from Chicago to Springfield and makes sure that Tad is laid to rest next to their father. So he has to handle all of that because Mary really can't. And at this point, Robert feels that Mary cannot care for herself. He really believes, and I think, you know, maybe he's influenced by some of the lack of understanding about mental health, some of the inherent misogyny in some of these systems, but he just feels that Mary is a danger to herself. And so he has her committed to an insane asylum, Bellevue, which is not an easy thing, I think, for a son to do.
No, and they had not, Mary and Robert, despite the fact that she advocates for him to sort of be spared during the war, they had not had a particularly warm and close relationship. And this does not improve that. Spoiler, professional tip for people, your parents are not going to enjoy it if you commit them to a mental
Don't
institution.
Don't get any ideas during this quarantine.
Like, this is not a good plan. So it's really hard. She eventually will get herself out of the mental institution, but their relationship never really worked
out. No, it is never the same. She's going to basically go to bat for herself. She has this incredible moment of sort of smuggling these letters out, getting people to come advocate. And it becomes such an embarrassment that Robert Todd Lincoln basically sort of says, fine, if you want to go live with your sister, that's your choice. But they never reconcile. And when she dies, the two of them had never really brought their relationship back together. So I always just think of Robert Todd Lincoln. He's breaching 40, he's to middle age, and he's the last living member of his family. And how hard that must have been, especially I think with so much unfinished business and so much lack of intimacy, lack of closure with his family members. This is where his life starts to get, I think, a little crazy. he's Robert Todd Lincoln. He's a successful lawyer. He's actually done very well for himself. He'll make himself a millionaire in his lifetime. But in 1881, after declining several other government positions, he agrees to be Secretary of War under President James Garfield. And I am on the record in our virtual tours and other things as being in love with President James Garfield. I love him. And the fact that he wants Robert Todd Lincoln as Secretary of War, I think speaks highly to Garfield.
Tell me, Becca, how does it end for President Garfield?
It does not go so well. Those of you who know a little bit about presidential history know James Garfield is not a long-serving president. He is going to be at the 6th Street train station, which is where the National Gallery of Art building is located today, very close to Capitol Hill. Robert Todd Lincoln is escorting Garfield to meet a train in the summer of 1881, and a crazed office seeker named Charles Guiteau is going to shoot President James Garfield, and Robert Todd Lincoln will witness that. So this makes the second presidential assassination directly related to Robert Todd Lincoln in his lifetime. Of course, Garfield survives the initial shooting, but he does not survive. He will pass away. And that's something that will, again, stay with Robert Todd Lincoln. Robert Todd Lincoln is, upset, but he finishes out his time, and then he agrees to serve as minister to the UK. We would know that position better as ambassador, but in this era, we were still using ministers. So he agrees to be minister to the United Kingdom. Robert Todd Lincoln goes abroad. At this point, he's married. He has three children, two daughters, and a son, Abraham II. They called him Jack. He brings Jack with him abroad. Jack's a teenager. He figures this will be a great opportunity for a son to be living abroad. And at the age of 15, almost 16, Jack will fall ill and die while they're living in England. So Robert Todd Lincoln loses the son that he has named for the father that he has lost. So again, great deal of tragedy. Robert Todd Lincoln comes back to the United States. He actually will become the kind of lead legal counsel for the Pullman Car Company, which was the train company. And then he becomes president of the Pullman Car Company. So he's a very important business executive. Again, very successful, very entrepreneurial. He's carved this life out for himself. It's 1901, and he's invited to the Pan American Exposition in Buffalo, New York. Rebecca, do you know who else was at the Pan American Exposition in Buffalo, New York?
I do, actually, they had a reception. So this is a big world's fair, essentially, and it's technology is huge. They're showing off electric light, which is a big deal. And they have at the hall or the Palace of Music a big reception, and they invite the President of the United States, who at that time was William McKinley. And while they are at this reception together, along with several hundred other people, President McKinley is shaking hands with greeters and well-wishers when, and hold on to your hats, folks, this is all true, you can look this up, a crazy anarchist named Leon Czolgosz walks up with a concealed pistol and, rather than shake the president's hand, shoots him in the stomach.
Of course, Robert Todd Lincoln
is right there.
Robert Todd Lincoln was there at this exposition with the intention of going to greet McKinley. And instead, he starts to hear screams through the crowd and the news that McKinley has been shot. So we're at three presidential assassinations in Robert Todd Lincoln's life.
And if, as I say on my tour, if you're hitting home runs, these are great statistics. If you're talking about presidential assassinations, not really great.
You can imagine at this point, Robert Todd Lincoln starts to believe that this maybe has something to do with him, that he made a choice at 21 years old, that is now shading the rest of his life. He is not, like his mother was, a person who believes in kind of all the spiritualism. He's not someone who's caught up in a lot of superstition. And yet, when this happens over and over and over, he thinks he's being punished.
Right.
He thinks that this is penance.
The facts are what the facts are.
which is insane. This does not make him leave Washington, D.C. forever, though. Although he has a home in Vermont, he continues to stay in D.C. He purchases a residence in historic Georgetown in 1911, the Laird Dunlop House. This is a house that we all, I know all three of us, mention on our Georgetown tours. It's one of the highlights of Georgetown. And this is kind of his permanent DC residence. What's interesting though, is he has this DC house, but it's not like he uses it for entertaining. No. It's not like he uses it as a base to go out because he's a bit of a hermit.
Yes. He will also for the rest of his life, coordinate his travel with the White House to make sure that he and the president are not in the same place at the same time, because he's so sort of concerned about this bad luck that keeps befalling him. So he has this gorgeous house that he doesn't really entertain in, and he tries to kind of stay out of the president's way as much as he possibly can.
He has trusted friends. He certainly has people that he'll see and meet with, but he keeps that circle very close and very tight. And he often will decline invitations. One time he's quoted as saying, "No, I'm not going, and they better not ask me, because there is a certain fatality about presidential functions when I am present," which is a lot of burden for one man to carry. And that's not the only burden. I think about Robert Todd Lincoln and all these positions he holds in his lifetime. And he said, even as an adult, he said, "They don't want me to be secretary. They don't want me to be minister. They don't want me to be president. They want Abraham Lincoln's son." He sort of knew that his biggest claim to fame was who his father was. And I think that's maybe a chip that he carries on his shoulder. I think that's an insecurity he carries. A lot of people who knew him when he lived in Georgetown would write that he was cold and aloof, but you can sort of understand why by the time he gets to 40, he is that way.
Right, and he's had so much grief as well that he just, I mean, I imagine that he didn't process it and or was having trouble processing it. That's a lot of things to have happened to one person and have carry around the knowledge that you're, you know, that there's some sort of curse or that you're, this is some sort of penance that you happen to be in the line of fire, so to speak, so many different times. Must have been really a heavy burden.
I can't imagine. And yet somehow, despite all of this, he continues to live on and on and on. He lives quite a long life. And then in 1922, so in 1922, he's in his 80s, which is pretty impressive for the life expectancy of that time, for the Civil War veteran, right? 1922, and he receives an invitation he cannot decline. He cannot say no to this. It is the dedication of the Lincoln Memorial on the National Mall.
He thinks about it, though. He thinks about it. We're declining.
He thinks about it.
I can't go. And his wife tells him, "Look at how many men get a memorial on the National Mall. Literally one."
Yeah. He thinks about it, but come on. Him not going would have been about the worst decision he could have made. He has to go. Lincoln's only living family member, this Civil War vet, this man who had been so connected to our history, he has to go. But you can understand the hesitation. Yes. President Warren G. Harding will be there to accept this dedication of this memorial. Former President William Howard Taft, now Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, will be there. Taft had worked very hard pushing for the completion of this memorial. All of these important dignitaries, men who'd served in this war, fought for Lincoln, for the Union, are going to be there. So Robert, under a great sense of obligation, will go. And I believe listeners of this podcast, if they know a little bit about American history, they might remember what happens at the dedication of the Lincoln Memorial. Do you guys remember? Nothing bad happened at the dedication.
I was like, wait a minute, nothing.
It's always funny, depending on the group of people, because some folks are like, the type of people who are never gonna say anything anyway. And then there's always the kids who are like, "He was shot," because they just like yell. But then there's like the group of people that are like, "Okay, I know a little bit. I know a little bit about American history, and I know Harding died in office, but I don't know any of the details of it." So it's always interesting, kind of the dynamics of the people on the tour, because you can see the wheels turning.
Yeah, you get a lot of people whose eyes get really wide. The important thing, listeners, though, is that nothing bad happens at the dedication of the Lincoln Memorial in that regard. But Robert Todd Lincoln attends that event, and it is, by all accounts, a beautiful day. It's a beautiful memorial. People are pleased. Robert Todd Lincoln himself will say that he is pleased with the memorial, particularly the sculpture of his father inside. And so you do have this kind of beautiful moment of this man in his 80s having a chance to maybe reconcile a little bit being the son of this huge towering figure on the National Mall. Of course, you are very correct, Candon, that Harding does die. President Warren G. Harding will die, although it won't be until next year, but he does die in office. So I always tell my students that is the final victim of Robert Todd Lincoln's curse. We can get into Harding on our podcast in a few episodes.
But I have a lot of little younger visitors who are very observant. And I talk about all these presidential assassinations, and I do it on my Arlington Cemetery tour because that is where he's buried, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a moment. But I'm standing in front of his grave and I'm talking about the story. And I was talking about I said something about Kennedy and how Robert Todd Lincoln wasn't there for Kennedy. And this student said, well, didn't Kennedy come to Arlington right before he was assassinated? Which I had not thought about until, I mean, I knew that. I just hadn't made the connection. So observant teenager.
We should mention, we mentioned the house that Robert Todd Lincoln owned in Georgetown, historic Georgetown, the Dunlop Laird House, the Laird Dunlop House. Right across the street from that house is the house that Jackie Kennedy lived in following President Kennedy's assassination. So one of the reasons I suggest people visit Georgetown is you can get that much history on one little corner of Georgetown, let alone if you walk three or four blocks. So to have those assassination homes kind of across from each other, only in Georgetown does that kind of history happen so close. So you're right, President Lincoln. You're correct, Candon. Robert Todd Lincoln will pass away. He passes away in 1926. He's almost 83, so he lives quite a long time. Right. And he is buried at Arlington National Cemetery. This is actually at the urging of his wife, who was also named Mary. She pushes for him to be buried at Arlington. In a letter, she wrote that her husband was a personage made of his own history independently. She underlined that word 5 times in the letter, independently, line of his great father. So for Mary, her Robert Todd Lincoln's wife, it was important that he be buried not in Springfield, not in the shadow of his father, but in this own place where he could be honored as a veteran, where he could be honored as a man who served his country, as a man who lived, you know, 80 incredible years of American history. And of course, they're joined there at Arlington by their son, Abraham II, or Jack, who was relocated there after Robert Todd Lincoln's death. One little cool thing, too, about his tomb that I was like researching in, and I was like, this is really neat. His tomb was done by a guy named James Earl Fraser, who I didn't realize we see James Earl Fraser sculptures every single day. He did the sculptures outside of the Supreme Court, outside of the archives, both the statues of Alexander Hamilton and Albert Gallatin outside of the Treasury building. Your favorite memorial, Rebecca, the Second Division Memorial, was done by James Earl Fraser, the Flaming Sword. And so I think it's a nice tribute to Robert Todd Lincoln that this incredible sculptor who did so many significant pieces in D.C., honors Robert Todd Lincoln with a tomb that is maybe not as grand as Lincoln Memorial, but really gives Robert Todd Lincoln, I think, the credit he deserves.
And the other thing about putting Robert Todd Lincoln at Arlington is, first of all, he was pretty instrumental in getting the purchase of Arlington and the settlement of the, after the shakedown, the Lee family sues the government. Robert Todd Lincoln is actually the man, the Secretary of War at the time, who handled over the check. And the other thing about his placement, the particular placement of his grave, is in a particular spot at the top of a hill. He's actually not too far from President Taft. But the reason he was put where he is, he faces, so his eyes are, he's not alive, obviously, but his eyes are in such a spot where he can see the Lincoln Memorial sort of in the distance. So he's got one of the few spots at Arlington that, you know, from his graveside, you can see his father's memorial. So he's kind of symbolically gazing at his father's memorial.
Y'all have such a, like, nicer viewpoint as to why he's buried in Arlington, because I read a great letter about his wife, Mary Harlan Lincoln, hated Mary Todd Lincoln and didn't want to spend eternity next to her.
Yes.
Also probably true.
Yes. That's also true. Mary and Mary did not get along. So I think one thing we were sort of talking about prepping for this podcast though, and this is another Robert Todd Lincoln story that I don't always tell on my tours because I tend to emphasize his kind of connection to the assassinations, but I do get asked a lot about, especially when we're doing the Lincoln assassination specifically, and it's about the Booth that saved the life of a Lincoln. You ladies familiar, yeah?
I love that story because it's just so, it's so weird. I always talk about how intertwined history is. Everyone knows everyone. It's a very small core group of Americans at any certain given time. And they all somehow know each other and are involved.
It's all interconnected. And especially to me, like Washington, D.C. is more like a small town than most places I've lived that are smaller than D.C. It's amazing how quickly people connect or know each other or at the same place at the same time. Although this particular story doesn't take place in D.C., it does showcase how connected they are. So Robert Todd Lincoln, this is either late 1863 or early 1864, but it's sometime in the winter of 63 to 64 during the Civil War. Robert Todd Lincoln is Harvard Law student, not yet serving under General Ulysses S. Grant yet. But he is at a train station in Jersey. He writes about this incident in a letter to a newspaper editor. So we have his account of the incident. But he said at one point he is pushed into the gap between the train car and the platform. And you can imagine what this is like. If you've been to a train station, you're kind of stuck and this train is starting to move and you're about to find yourself with a missing limb or being pulled along. And he's starting to fear for his life, fear for his injury. And he feels this hand pulling back his collar, and he's lifted back onto the platform. And Robert Todd Lincoln, you know, at this point, 1920, he's looking around trying to figure out what happened, and he sees a very famous man, the actor Edwin Booth, who at this time is probably the best known American Shakespearean actor in the United States. He's famous for treading the boards, doing Hamlet 100 nights in a row. Very, very famous. And Robert Todd Lincoln can't believe that this famous actor saved his life. So of course, he's going to write about it and tell everybody. And when he joins Grant's staff as this kind of special assistant to General Grant, he tells other officers that one time at a train station, this famous actor, Edwin Booth, saved his life. And one of these guys knows Edwin Booth. And so this colonel writes to Edwin Booth. And Edwin Booth remembered that day. He remembered pulling this guy off the train track. But at the time, he had no idea who this 19-year-old kid was. This wasn't, you know, this wasn't a time when the president's children were photographed and put in the paper often. You know, a celebrity like Edwin Booth wouldn't have known Robert Todd Lincoln. And so he gets this letter, Edwin, from this colonel saying, you saved the life of the son of the president of the United States. And I'm writing with the thanks of not just myself, but General Ulysses S. Grant, who thanks you for saving this man's life. And Edwin Booth can't believe it. And it's important to know, Edwin was the opposite of his brother, John, in terms of loyalties. He was a strong unionist. Throughout the Civil War, had great respect for President Abraham Lincoln, actually did benefit performances to raise money for the Union cause. So it brought him great pride and joy to have played a small part in saving Robert Todd Lincoln's life. So yeah, the fact that you could have a Booth to save a Lincoln, and that's 100% fact, is insane to me.
I always start off that story with a newspaper clipping where the headline says Booth saves Lincoln. Because most people with, you know, not being as history nerds as we are, the only Booth they know is John Wilkes Booth. And the only Lincoln they know is Abraham Lincoln. And they're pretty damn sure that John Wilkes Booth did not save Abraham Lincoln. So like the looks of confusion is always fun.
Those are kind of two people too, who I think have really interesting parallel lives, sort of Robert Todd Lincoln and Edwin Booth, who are both deeply connected to the tragedy of April 14th, 1865, and carry it with them, obviously in very different ways. And certainly you've got a man like Robert Todd Lincoln resisting the spotlight, constantly pulled into it. Edwin Booth loves the spotlight, but then when his brother commits this terrible act, he feels obligated to pull back, even though he keeps kind of going back into the spotlight, but he feels that he must constantly be pulling back because of the acts of his brother. I am not aware of a really good book that compares these two men, but I would be really interested in reading it or seeing like a play to that subject. Ford's Theater, if you're listening, that would make a really good play when you reopen and we come see all your
shows. It's really interesting how neither of them can kind of ever get past that.
Eddie and Bobby, that's what I would call
Eddie and Bobby, that's a good idea.
Yeah. I'm a terrible playwright.
Wait, aren't we supposed to all be like writing masterpieces while we're in quarantine? I think.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. King Lear.
I am. I don't want to brag or anything, but.
Listeners, this is our masterpiece. So I hope right? it's, I hope it's holding up.
Our podcast?
This podcast.
I like it. I like
it. This is my my quarantine masterpiece. So that is the life of Robert Todd Lincoln. And we've been sort of chuckling throughout this, but it really, as we were prepping for this podcast, as we've been talking about him, it is sad. He's fascinating. I love sharing his story with students because I think they connect to the drama of it. But I think particularly at the age that I am in my life, and we're living through so much history right now, it's sad. It's sad how much loss he goes through. It's sad how much he has to grieve. And it is sad to me that he often feels that he never escapes that shadow of his father. But it's fascinating. Yeah,
he's such a fascinating character in his own right. And I think that even now, the way we talk about him, he still sort of is overshadowed by his dad, which is unfortunate because he really does live one of the most interesting lives in the later part of the 19th century. I mean, he's president so many different and important events.
I think one small way we can contribute to remembering him as his own individual is I would not suggest, I mean, of course I suggest taking our Lincoln assassination tour at any visit to Washington, D.C., but to learn more about Robert Todd Lincoln, I don't think that's our best tour to take for him. I think our Georgetown tour.
Or the Arlington one.
And I know where his gravesite is, but until you mentioned that, Rebecca, I had never put the two and two together that you can see the Lincoln Memorial.
Why he doesn't face the road, that's why his wife's grave is right facing the walkway.
Yeah, that makes so much sense now that... Now that you say that. And, you know, back to the history being incestuous, that one corner of 30th and N Northwest in Georgetown, where you have his house and then the house that Jackie Kennedy moved into.
Yeah, I would say as a tour guide, if I was to pick one place to go and get the Robert Todd Lincoln experience, I would actually say Georgetown to see his house, to see that great Civil War history that's there. And in Georgetown, you can visit Oak Hill Cemetery, which Rebecca mentioned earlier, but that's where the Carroll Crypt is, where Willie Lincoln was interred. Even though Willie Lincoln is obviously buried today in Springfield with the rest of the Lincoln family, you can still go to the Carroll Crypt. Mm-hmm. Oak Hill Cemetery is typically open to the public when there isn't, you know, a pandemic going on. But there is a plaque to Willie Lincoln at Oak Hill at the Carroll Crypt, and people still come and leave pennies there to remember the Lincolns. So I think that's a very poignant little visit you could make in Georgetown as well. So I think you can get a more personal experience when you're looking at the Lincoln family in Georgetown than you would get like on the National Mall or on our Lincoln assassination tour. So yeah, so far on this podcast, when we've talked about first children, we've talked about this larger than life figure, Alice Roosevelt Longworth. We've talked about this very tragic figure, Robert Todd Lincoln. We'll need to maybe find someone next who's just kind of plain Jane. We'll need to have like a very average first child.
So yeah, Robert Todd Lincoln. I mean, I knew everything that you said, but it's like very rarely do I think about it or listen to it all put in one succinct timeline. He really did have a tragic life.
It's so much. And I think this is, you know, I think it's human nature to put yourself in people's shoes or look at things mm-hmm. differently when you reach different stages of your life. Yes. And I think about the age at which I'm at and, you know, where Robert Todd Lincoln was in his 30s and how much he had already lost at that point. And I can't imagine being the age I am and having lost all that he had. And not to mention living through the bloodiest war in American history to have, even though he wasn't on the front lines of combat, really at the end of the war, seeing that devastation, seeing what it had wrought, to think that this war was ending and the country was going to come back together and it was all going to be over. And then there's this horrible tragedy of his father's death and then onward and onward and onward. And I have such sympathy for how young he is as these things are rolling out in his lifetime.
Well, this is kind of a downer, so who has a good Lincoln joke?
Oh, one of my favorite thing about Lincoln is, you know, Lincoln was always telling jokes and whatnot, President Abraham Lincoln, and he once said, you know, they say that I'm two-faced, but if I was two-faced, do you think I'd wear this one?
Oh, Lincoln.
I am on the record, too, of actually finding President Abraham Lincoln quite attractive. Throw young Abraham Lincoln in some skinny jeans and like a vest, and he's at a coffee shop doing open mic poetry, and we're all swooning.
Okay, but knowing that your taste in historical sculptures, when you say skinny jean and vest, I'm picturing him with no shirt, just the vest. If you are interested in Rebecca's buff sculpture love, please look up the George Washington sculpture at the American History Museum.
I call him Sexy George. We'll have to do like, I tell you what, right now, I'll promise it, we'll do a mini pod, a quick special pod just for our Patreon supporters, and I'll talk about why that Sexy George sculpture is so fun. So we'll do a little, I'm going to make a promise, we'll do a little bonus on Sexy George for all our Patreon supporters, which we're so thankful to everyone who's subscribing and listening to podcasts, but our Patreon supporters are literally keeping us working, they're keeping us going, and so we're so, so thankful. So if you've subscribed to support us on the Patreon, thank you. And you can always reach out to us on topics that you might be interested in hearing on our podcast. On the next Tour Guide Tell All, you're going to hear about Garfield and Gâteau. We're going to do a whole podcast on that. I honestly think at some point soon we'll do a podcast on McKinley and Czolgosz as well. So we're going to hit all of the assassinations in the podcast in general. And I'm sure we're going to come back to Lincoln at some point. Maybe a different aspect of Lincoln. I'd like to do a podcast on Edwin Stanton at some point.
Yeah, the great thing about Washington, D.C. is you can segue almost any type of American history, just world history story. There is a statue or a memorial, or they've been here. There is some way to bring up any topic in this city.
So we're going to talk about anything and everything.